Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Before we start, let me just ask, will there be division of argument this morning? Counsel for appellant?
Your Honor, I'm Amelia Boston. Only I will be arguing on behalf of the relators today.
Okay. Thank you. Counsel for respondent? Well, thank you very much for clarifying that for us. That will help. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your argument, and counsel for appellant, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. I'd ask each of you who are arguing, when you come to the podium, which can be raised and lowered, please introduce yourself, because we're recording this, and that will make it clear for anyone listening, for their listening pleasure, to Court of Appeals arguments. So with that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Amelia Voss, and I represent the relators in this matter, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and the Land Stewardship Project. Before I delve into the weeds of this case, I'd like to talk briefly about what this case is and is not about. This case is not an attack on farmers, and this case is not a wholesale attack on feedlots. Instead, this case is about the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and specifically whether the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency exercised its duties under law. In Relator's briefing, we have raised numerous challenges to the Pollution Control Agency's decision-making in this case, and on the basis of those challenges, we are asking this court today to rescind the permit issued to Daly Farms and to order further environmental review through an environmental impact statement. Today, I would like to focus on just one of Relator's challenges, and that's the challenge to the PCA's environmental review analysis in this case. Specifically, Relators have identified flaws with the PCA's analysis of two key effects of this project: its greenhouse gas emissions and its potential to contaminate groundwater. I'd like to begin by talking about the greenhouse gas emissions of this project because, frankly, it's an easy issue and it resolves this entire case. The controlling law here is the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act, or MEPA. And MEPA requires that before a permit is issued to a project, the PCA determine whether that project has any potential for significant environmental effects, and if so, that an environmental impact statement be ordered. In performing this analysis, the PCA uses a guidance document known as the Environmental Assessment Worksheet. And that worksheet is meant to simply guide the PCA's analysis in considering potential effects of a given project. In this case, Relators reviewed the Environmental Assessment Worksheet that was prepared for this project and identified that a major effect of this project was missing, and that was an analysis of this project's greenhouse gas emissions. Relators identified that this was missing to the Pollution Control Agency, and in response, the Pollution Control Agency said it was not required to consider those emissions because there simply was not a blank for that on this EAW form. And this is not only an error of law, but frankly, it runs contrary to the form itself.
In your briefing and your argument, you don't cite any rule or statute in support of the assertion that they were required to consider the gas emissions in the EAW. What do you rely on in support of that challenge?
Your Honor, it is the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act itself, and it is MEPA itself, because MEPA does not identify specific pollutants that the agency that's conducting the environmental review must consider in any case. It simply provides that the agency must consider any potential significant environmental effects of a project. And so, of course, every single project is different, and that means that the potential significant effects of any given project are going to vary from project to project. And so, of course, the EAW form is meant to be used as a guide, but it's not the ultimate question. And so that's the problem with PCA's decision making here, is that PCA looked to this form and said, this is the only analysis we need to do. And that's an incorrect interpretation of the law, because that elevates this form that's meant to be used as a guidance document above the rules interpreting MEPA and above the MEPA statutory structure itself. Additionally, if we look to the plain language of this...
I understand what you're saying, counsel, and I must say, when I first read, well, it was kind of like you didn't check this box, and that was concerning to me. But then when I looked at the way that this worksheet was developed, it was, you know, I think there was rulemaking was used, I'm sure you can correct me if I'm wrong, and authority was given to the chair of the EQB to develop this form. It doesn't seem just like some... you know, checklist that was developed off in a room somewhere. Shouldn't we be giving more deference to a worksheet that's gone through a whole process to be developed?
Your Honor, I think what is important to keep in mind here is that this worksheet, per the Environmental Quality Board's own rules, which I believe this is 4410, I'd have to check, 4410.0300, specifically state that this form is meant to be used as guidance only. And so when the Environmental Quality Board, who created the EAW form, has very clearly in its rules indicated that this form is only meant to be used as a guidance document, that's the deference that we need to give to the Environmental Quality Board and say, we will use it as a guidance document, but we won't consider it the ultimate question. But I think perhaps even more important in answering your question is, if we look at this form itself, it's clear on the face of this form that greenhouse gas emissions are contemplated in consideration on this form. And so this is, I'm looking at Record Site 18, which is the EAW form that was prepared for this specific project. And if we look at question six asks for air emissions broadly. The category is air emissions. And underneath that, it says, identify major air emissions from the feedlot. And so this question certainly would encompass greenhouse gas emissions, which the United States Supreme Court has determined are air pollutants. But even if the Pollution Control Agency didn't think that greenhouse gas emissions should have been considered under question six, question 11 on this same form, which is record site page 24, is a catch-all question. And it specifically asks, if a project may cause other adverse environmental impacts not addressed by questions 1 through 10, identify and discuss here. And so that allows the agency to identify other potential significant environmental effects of the project that maybe weren't specifically called out in the very general questions in the form and analyze them.
Council, I'd like to just stop you with the language you just used. So that you're saying that that form allows the agency, and that's really what I'm struggling with your argument, is the role that you see the court playing in terms of second-guessing the agency's determination and perhaps even the EQB's determination as to what are the relevant considerations for an EAW. Mm-hmm. If you could point me to some case law, preferably in Minnesota, that would suggest that this court would insert itself and say, either EKB or MPCA, you made an error by omitting a particular aspect of the EAW analysis.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think the controlling case law on that point is the Supreme Court case Card versus Candio High County. And that case specifically says that when an agency entirely fails to consider an important aspect of the problem, its decision must be reversed. And of course, we recognize that there's deference to agency decisions, but that deference is not complete. And the Minnesota Administrative Procedures Act recognizes that that deference does not extend when the agency has made an error of law, when it's made a decision that's arbitrary and capricious.
That's where we go back to Judge Werke's initial question, is where is the basis for your challenge in the rules and the regulations? And I appreciate you are relying on this broad charge to the MPCA to evaluate the significant environmental effects. I see that language. It is broad, but it has to be interpreted. It has to be applied. There's a rigorous procedure for doing so. As far as I can see, it's been followed in this case in terms of the development of the EAW and in terms of how the EAW in this particular case was prepared. So, you know, where does the court challenge the MPCA's failure to consider greenhouse gas emissions based on existing you know, statutes, rules, regulations, or case law?
Your Honor, I think maybe the missing piece here is maybe a disconnect between whether greenhouse gas emissions are a significant effect of this project. And I think—
As a matter of law. I mean, it seems to me that's what you're looking to this court to hold.
Well, I don't know that there's any specific pollutant from a project that's deemed by Minnesota law to be a specific significant environmental effect of that project. It has to be a case-by-case analysis. But the Pollution Control Agency is already evaluating greenhouse gas emissions for other projects, and it recognizes that agriculture in Minnesota is the third largest emitter of greenhouse gases. And so what's the critical flaw here is that the Pollution Control Agency, knowing that greenhouse gases are perhaps the most significant threat to Minnesota's environment as a whole, entirely failed to even consider them in the context of this EAW. Not that they considered them and found that they would not be a potential effect, but that they failed to consider them at all. And as I said, when you look at the plain language of the form and knowing what the Pollution Control Agency knows, that they are, that agriculture is such an intense contributor, especially with the record that the relators put, or the facts that relators put into the record identifying that this project would be the equivalent of adding 21,000 cars to the state of Minnesota in terms of its emissions, that record requires the PCA to look at this as a potential significant environmental effect.
So
I have a cold. Question. I'm not okay. Trying to get your attention. I'm sorry.
So, Council, if we agreed, and I'm not saying that we do, with you on this point about greenhouse gases, why would we rescind the permit and direct an EIS? Wouldn't we be reversing and saying you need to take another look at this, including a look at greenhouse gases? And then they would presumably look at that as well and make an independent decision about whether or not to direct it, to have an EIS.
Your Honor is 100% correct about that point, but the reason we're asking that this court rescind the permit and actually perform an EIS is perhaps a matter of efficiency, because we've also identified that there's these other concerns about PCA's environmental analysis surrounding its consideration of this project's potential to contaminate groundwater, and that would require ordering of an EIS. And so if an EIS is going to be ordered in this case, it would make sense that we would just consider the greenhouse gas emissions as one component of that study rather than going through a piecemeal remand to do an EAW just on greenhouse gases and then an EIS to evaluate groundwater contamination. And the reason we're asking for rescission of the permit is because this environmental analysis has to occur before the permit is issued. It's a 1-2 step, and we can't get to step two before we've thoroughly done step one. I'd like to turn briefly to the second effect that relators have challenged PCA's, or the second challenge that PCA's have identified in, the second challenge relators have identified to PCA's environmental review analysis, and that's its analysis surrounding this project's potential for groundwater contamination. And when we look at PCA's analysis here, it's important to keep two facts in mind: the location of this project in this very vulnerable karst area, and then the sheer size and scope of this project. And those two facts are what make this, those combination of facts make this project specifically unique. And the concern about that is that this project is already the largest feedlot in Winona County, and this expansion would triple it in size. And the problem with that is that it would generate 46 million gallons of manure each year, which is twice the amount produced by the city of Rochester. And so when we apply that vast quantity of manure to ground that's very susceptible to pollution from anything that's applied to the topsoil, there's clearly a potential significant environmental effect here. And PCA recognized that, but it said, we're not worried about it because we know how to mitigate it. We know how to prevent any of that manure from getting into the groundwater. And what's concerning about that finding is that on the very same day that PCA made that finding, it asked the Environmental Quality Board for an environmental impact statement to study just that, to study how to prevent fertilizer from contaminating groundwater. And so that those two decisions cannot be reconciled. The PCA cannot say on the one hand that it knows how to prevent this problem, while on the other hand saying it needs further study to investigate this problem.
I want to challenge you on that, because I can imagine a lot of situations where you could say, look, I know how to address, mitigate a problem in this particular area, and if they don't follow my steps, I'll come after them. versus I know this is a general issue throughout the region, and we need to think about what we do on a regional basis or a statewide basis. You know, as a and decision Honor, maker, those do not seem necessarily in conflict.
I understand your point, but I think when we look at the record in this case, and specifically, relators have identified that the mitigations that PCA relied on, which are these this menu of conditions that were added to the permit, there's absolutely no factual support in the record that those will prevent this pollution in a karst area. And so certainly that is theoretically possible, but when we look at the facts of this case and look at what PCA actually relied on, it's clear there's no support for that. And I mean, just to dig into that a little bit, looking at the data that supports those mitigations that PCA identified, the studies show that those practices are highly variable. They vary in effectiveness even between Minnesota and Iowa, which are neighboring states. They vary based on soil conditions. And in most of the data in the record shows that their efficacy is often less than 50%, sometimes as even low as 6%. And so if it's these mitigations that we're relying on to say effectively, we can assure that no manure will leach into the groundwater, the data simply isn't in the record to support that these conditions will work. And I see that my time is almost up, so I'm going to briefly conclude. But the concern here is that we need to know that these effects can be mitigated before we go forward, because the groundwater in this area that people rely on for drinking water in the country and in the city is already contaminated. And it's clear that PCA didn't take the hard look that it's required to take at the greenhouse gas emissions and at this project's potential to contaminate groundwater. And for these reasons, we're asking this court to rescind the permit and to order an environmental impact statement.
Thank you. You have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for the state.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Noor Ibrahim, Assistant Attorney General for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. MPCA's record shows that it properly analyzed all of the key issues for a water feedlot permit. There are a few key findings here to support the MPCA. One is that the MPCA must issue a permit if it can find that the permittee will comply with all federal and state pollution regulations. And that is what the agency found here. In addition to that, the MPCA considered all of the relevant environmental factors in its EAW analysis. So as it relates to the EAW and the mitigation measures in the permit, the MPCA analyzed the karst geology. The MPCA's rules are designed to be protective of the environment, and the MPCA determined that the project complied with all of the rules. And the MPCA included the best management practices as an additional layer of protection for the region. As it relates to the karst geology, MPCA provided a very robust analysis. You can refer to MPCA record site 1829. The MPCA looked at the Daly Farms lot and all of the 41 sites where there would be land application of manure, and it evaluated all of these for sensitive features, and that is inclusive of the karst geology. They looked at the 41 fields, and it also included field maps and the manure management plan outlining all of these features, and that's on record site 68 to 78. So the agency did not ignore those features. In addition to that, the MPCA rules are designed to be protective. So if you are able to comply with the rules through the construction and design, then the project will not have any environmental effects. The expansion is designed to ensure compliance and mitigation of any potential water impacts. MPCA record site 1824 shows that construction and design is built into every aspect of the permit and the manure management plan.
Well, on the manure, explain this to me, on the manure management plan, the MMP, Giles Randall, of course, issued a report, and he had a different recommendation than what was relied on. What's the significance of that? Or so, should there be any significance of that?
I'd say that there is no significance of that. The report is discussing the number that the nitrogen application rate. And so the rule that's under that's being disputed is Minnesota Rules 7020.2225, subpart 3. That rule states that the crop nitrogen needs and removal rates of the University of Minnesota are based on the University of Minnesota's recommendations. And so the agency refers to those recommendations, and then it issues its agency guidance. That guidance applies universally, and it's the standard for regulating feedlots. And so,
but that feedlots, perhaps not feedlots of this karst area in terms of the geography, the topography that's there.
Well, the agency's guidance takes all of that into consideration because it's the top, it's the maximum rate that you can use. And so the agency has selected the maximum amount that you can use that is beneficial to the farmers, but it also is protective of the environment. And so once you use that rate, and it applies universally, and that's why the agency selected it, because it doesn't require the agency to create specifications for every site. There are additional factors there, but that is a guidance tool.
So. Doesn't, in your opinion, then create any reason to have further hearing on that?
No, that would be a challenge to the MPCA's guidance. That is not a challenge to, that is not a factual dispute. The MPCA, as the state regulator for feedlots, needs to have the ability to apply its expertise and be granted deference in interpreting the University of Minnesota's recommendations and applying that. Again, it's a standard that's applied universally.
Council, if I may take you to the greenhouse gas issue. So realtors suggest that Daly Farm, if this goes forward, would be the 43rd largest greenhouse gas emitter in the state. Would you agree that that's somewhere in the ballpark?
Yes, that sounds accurate.
If that's true, how can isn't the failure to consider the environmental effects of greenhouse gas emissions kind of get in the way of a determination about whether significant environmental effects are going to result from this project?
No, I would say that this was not a failure to consider an environmental effect that was necessary for this water permit. So the agency is granted deference under MEPA to determine which environmental factors need to be evaluated. So the agency did that. The environmental assessment worksheet covers all of the environmental effects that one can anticipate from a feedlot project.
So you're saying that even though they didn't check that box, so to speak, the agency did consider the environmental effects of greenhouse gas emissions, and if so, where do we, can we most quickly look to determine?
Well, the agency determines which environmental factors it should consider. And so the greenhouse gas emissions for this type of permit is not something that's currently under consideration. And part of the reason for that is that there is no science right now. There's no regulatory framework to evaluate that as it applies to feedlots and to projects specifically.
But isn't this an evolving area of science? I mean, 50 years ago, a lot of people, well, some people still don't, but a lot of people didn't believe in green, you know, climate change. I mean, we've seen a lot of scientific change.
Right. It is evolving.
Does the agency need to be aware of that?
The agency is aware of the greenhouse gas emissions problem. The MPCA record cites 7762 to 8271 and 8276 and 9439 are studies that the agency looked at that evaluate greenhouse gases. The agency doesn't have a framework right now. Even the EPA.
You have the GEIS recommendation to have the generic EIS. Is that kind of to enhance where you're at?
Well, the GEIS would not cover greenhouse gas emissions unless the environment.
Not that specific. It's much broader. Is that
right?
What you're
saying? So it's a generic EIS, and the purpose of that is to look more broadly at the issue of water pollution.
I didn't mean to turn the focus because it is a concern as far as the greenhouse emissions.
Right. So going back to the greenhouse gas emissions issue, so even the EPA at this time has declined to review greenhouse gas emissions as it relates to feedlots because there's a great amount of uncertainty there, and that's in air permits, which is where you would expect to have this sort of analysis generally. And so we're one step removed from that. We're dealing here with a water permit, and so the agency addressed the proper environmental factors for this type of environmental review, and greenhouse gas emissions are currently not regulated. There's not the framework in order to dive into that. But as the agency is aware of the issue, as that develops, the agency will include it in its evaluation, and that may not be necessarily in water permits, it may be in air permits, it may be relevant to all projects. That's to be determined.
The Minnesota legislature has passed some legislation with regard to greenhouse gas emissions. So when will the MPCA act in light of the legislature's green light to go forward on the issue?
It's my understanding that this is being developed by MPCA, and it's also my understanding that the Environmental Quality Board is taking steps to figure out how that can be evaluated and actually put into the EAW worksheet itself. And when that happens, that can be incorporated into this existing project through an amendment. This permit is valid until 2024, and so...
Is what you said about the ongoing work at the state to address this included in the EAWs, is that in the record?
I'm sorry?
Is that in the record, what you just said about the current work on this issue by the state?
No.
And so I want to follow up on that in light of the fact that it's not in the record. And you are making a reference, I think, to the possibility that the EAW form will change in the future. We have a form now. It doesn't include, in our record, doesn't include consideration of the greenhouse gas emissions. We all acknowledge that. But it's the floor, right, for what the MPCA can do. They don't have to follow or limit themselves in their EAW analysis to just the boxes on the EAW form, right?
Correct.
Okay.
The agency.
So you could have looked at greenhouse gas emissions.
The agency can look at any factor that it considers relevant. But the greenhouse gas emissions project, relators cite to several studies issued by the agency, but those studies are addressing the broader issue of greenhouse gases and how the entire agricultural sector is contributing to greenhouse gases. But what you're asking, what they're asking to do is to narrow that down and apply it to this Daly Farms project, which even though it's a larger project, it's smaller scale compared to the entire sector. And it's important to note that the agency did conduct the recommended air dispersion modeling, and that's recommended by the EPA. And so the agency did evaluate hydrogen sulfide, ammonia, and odorous gases. And those are the ambient air quality conditions that they are currently capable of evaluating. And so I would say that we should defer to the agency's expertise in this area as far as what they evaluated and how they analyzed it. And so I'd like to just go back to the mitigation measures here. As far as the protective nature of the rules, the agency found that if the project was able to comply with the rules, then it determined that there wasn't any environmental harm. And so the project is designed in a way to ensure.
Kiltz, I want to have a question about that. It does seem to me, as I read your brief, the MPCA is primarily relying on the fact that Daly Farms will comply with regulations and that that compliance itself is sufficient mitigation. So do I have that part right?
That is correct.
Okay. So what troubles me about it is I match that up to our case law. Our case law says, well, vague statements of good intentions are not sufficient. Doesn't that amount to a vague statement of the good intention to comply?
I would say that it's not a vague intention to comply because it's more than just future compliance. It's actually the design. So Daly Farms applied to expand their feedlot, and that expansion involves construction of liquid manure storage basins and runoff controls. And so all of those features meet the rules. So by virtue of constructing this project and constructing it in the manner that the MPCA approved, they will comply with the regulations. So it's not a vague attempt. It's pretty specific to the project. And then in addition to that, the agency included the best management practices. So the best management practices provide an additional layer of protection to better mitigate.
Those are the seven steps included. And as I, again, correct me if I'm wrong, as I understand the record, Daly Farms has the option to choose two out of the seven, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so that, again, comparing that up to our case law says mitigation measures have to be specific, targeted, and certain. I'm not sure I see how that the MMB complies because it isn't specific. I mean, it's specific in that there are seven items, but certain, well, it's at the Daly Farms option. So help me out with that.
Yes. The MPCA is relying on the rules and the design and the construction, the permit and the manure management plan. But as an additional layer, it's relying It's including the best management practices, and it's doing that in part to be responsive to some of the concerns raised by the community. And these BMPs, they are specific to reducing and mitigating nitrate loss. These are the best management practices that we have. This is the best known science on this issue. And the agency does grant Daily Farms the ability to select 2 of the 7, but the reason for that is you're dealing with thousands of acres, several fields, different types of crops, soil, weather conditions, and if you were to say that you have to do these 2 conditions, that would actually potentially result in no mitigation measure, because there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. These are the 7 that work, and since we all want to prevent water pollution, we want the farmers to select the best 2. And so that is as specific as we can get. And if you have any other questions?
Okay. No, thank you very much. The argument? Any rebuttal? We will give you 2 minutes.
Thank you. And may it please the court, Matthew Berger on behalf of Daily Farm of Lewiston. I appreciate the opportunity to just briefly address a couple of issues. Number one, on the point that was just raised about the certainty, where this is different than a vague statement of future intention is that the requirements are part of a permit that is specifically enforceable by the agency. So it's not Daily Farms generally saying, yeah, we're gonna do that and that's the end of it. It's there's a permit in place that the agency enforces that says if Daily Farm does not follow through on these items, there are consequences that the agency can enforce.
You understand my concern. It's that, yes. that condition added to the permit actually gives discretion to Daily Farms to choose 2 out of the 7, right?
It does, Your Honor, but if they don't do those 2, which the agency has deemed to be sufficient, if they only do 1 or none, then there's an enforceable obligation, and that takes it out under the case law from that vague statement to a specifically enforceable requirement.
But they can do more, as
Absolutely.
Many farmers do, correct?
Absolutely. The second point is on the greenhouse gas emissions, and with due respect to the agency, Your Honor, in response to your question, I would dispute that Daily Farm will be the 43rd largest. I think that there's absolutely no evidence of that. This is an expansion of a project. The record that the groups have placed, the evidence includes broad, vague emission numbers from some unknown animals at some unknown farms at some unknown place somewhere in the world. The citations in our brief are to specific studies that say greenhouse gas emissions are highly specific, based not just on type of livestock, but what's fed to the livestock, what's the geography. So there's no evidence that this one, and there's no way that the agency can do that based on current science.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will note, since counsel for respondent did get an additional minute of time, we'll add a minute to your rebuttal time, so let's give them 6 minutes. Not that you need to take it all.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to just touch on some of the points that came up in Your Honor's questioning just now. And the first, just briefly, is Your Honor's asked some questions about Giles Randall's report and these agronomic rates. And I think the discussion that happened here shows exactly why a contested case hearing would have been beneficial. And the challenge is that relators had identified through Giles Randall that inputs that would go into calculating the agronomic rate that he proposed were consistent with the industry standard, and the guidance document that the PCA referenced didn't explain at all exactly what inputs they were using or how they arrived at those inputs. And so having a thorough record created to evaluate exactly what inputs needed to go into this rate calculation would have been extremely critical in this case, because the rate at which this manure is applied to the ground is perhaps the single most important thing that can facilitate preventing leaching into the groundwater, because if we're only applying the exact right amount that those crops can then absorb, we're not going to have as much leaching as we would if we're over-applying. So that was a critical point that should have been evaluated in a contested case hearing. The second thing that I'd like to touch on is the structure regarding permitting. And Minnesota Rule 7001.0150 requires that the agency create a permit that contains conditions necessary to achieve compliance with Minnesota statutes. And so clearly these rules contemplate that perhaps a permit that simply reiterates the requirements of the rules may not be enough in every case. We might have to add special conditions to make sure that a project can comply with Minnesota's pollution control laws and statutes. And that's exactly what PCA did here. PCA admitted that we needed some extra practices through these seven best management practices to ensure that this project could comply with the law. The problem is that those conditions are just wholly unsupported. And while I think both respondents have identified, you know, well, PCA has some ongoing authority to visit this project and determine if they're following these practices, what's missing is that there's absolutely no groundwater monitoring that would tell us whether any of these practices are working. So PCA could go out to the site and identify, sure, they've maybe used a nitrate inhibitor, but there would be no indication of whether that actually prevented any manure from leaching into the groundwater, which is the question that we need to know. And so there really isn't meaningful oversight in terms of whether this project is sufficiently mitigating its pollution consequences. Finally, I'd like to go back to Judge Bratvold's questions about these greenhouse gas emissions and the statutory mandate. So we do have the Next Generation Energy Act, and it requires that we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in this state 80% by 2050. And we are already not meeting our targets to meet that goal. We are already behind on meeting that goal. And so with that context, PCA clearly still is not evaluating greenhouse gas emissions, but it's false to say that they can't. Clearly, PCA has modeling or methods to evaluate the quantity of greenhouse gas emissions, or at least a modeled quantity of greenhouse gas emissions that a project would produce. What perhaps is not state-of-the-art science yet is identifying how that quantity would increase climate change incrementally, but that's not a question that we need to answer. We all know that greenhouse gas emissions are contributing to climate change, and the fact that they're happening and the fact that we have a statutory structure that asks us to reduce, not increase, these greenhouse gas emissions shows that when we're looking at a project that's so large that it has the potential to be a significant emitter of greenhouse gases, we need to evaluate exactly what those emissions are going to be and whether that's something that we need to try and mitigate in this case. And I think Mr. Berger correctly identified, certainly a lot of things when we do these analyses are very project specific, but that points to why we need to do thorough environmental study and actually look at the context of this project and figure out what its consequences are going to be. And so just to briefly conclude, I'd like the court to keep in mind the policy behind the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act in this case, because under that policy, when PCA acts in permitting a project on behalf of the state, it's supposed to be educated about the consequences of that project before it issues that permit. This is a measure twice and cut once system. And if we don't do that due diligence on the front end, if we don't actually dig deep and investigate what consequences a project may cause, we pay for it deeply on the back end, because almost always those consequences can't be undone. In this case, PCA didn't measure twice. And in the case of the greenhouse gas emissions, they didn't even measure once. And so I'm asking this court to send this back to the PCA for them to perform that environmental impact statement so they can do the investigation that they should have done in this case. There are no further questions.
Thank you very much. This matter has been well briefed and well argued. The court thanks you all for that. It'll be taken under consideration, and a decision will be issued within 90 days. Thank you. And with that, court is in recess.